postpartum body odor. It is a totally natural phenomenon because your body chemistry changes after giving birth. And so sometimes that means that what worked before is no longer effective. But I am excited to say that now there is a solution for that stubborn odor. The Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is a completely natural deodorant made by a postpartum mom who went through it herself. And it works by eliminating and preventing bacterial body odor without covering up your skin's comforting smell to your baby while giving you 12 hours of odor control. And let me tell you, it actually works. Here at the house, we've all been trying it and loving it. Now, before you think, ew, you're sharing a deodorant with your husband and daughter, let me explain that this full body deodorant comes in a convenient pump applicator that lets you apply it anywhere on your body with no bacteria traveling on the deodorant, so no ew involved. We also love that the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant has a delightful natural scent of USDA certified organic extracts that smell like a pink sugar cookie with lemon frosting. I thought this would be a little strange, but it's actually amazing. Also, the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is free from artificial fragrances and any kind of senoestrogens or herbs that can interfere with breastfeeding. Find your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant at postpartumdeodorant.com. That's postpartumdeodorant.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off through the month of May. Get your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant now at postpartumdeodorant.com and start smelling more like yourself again. Now that we're in full spring mode, I am constantly reaching for my Jenny Kane Crop Cashmere Cocoon Cardigan because I find it is the perfect level of warm and cozy for when there's still a light chill in the air, but I don't want a coat. And like so many of Jenny Kane's bestsellers, this 100% cashmere cardigan is just so versatile. So I can wear it on its own over dresses, short sleeves, long sleeves, with slacks or jeans. It works with all of it, which is a really good thing because I just never want to take it off. And of course, this cardigan has the impeccable and luxurious level of craftsmanship that you can expect from all of Jenny Kane's products. Jenny Kane is a California brand through and through, and so think minimalist and effortless, but totally refined. Because they are a sponsor of the podcast, for a limited time, our listeners can get 15% off their first order while supporting our show. Go to jennykane.com and use the code BIRTHFUL15 to get 15% off. Now, I know that I go on and on about Jenny Kane sweaters because I'm frankly obsessed, but they also have everything you could want to finish out your look. They have dresses, shoes, and even a stunning collection of home essentials. Curate a wardrobe that never goes out of style at jennykane.com. As a Birthful listener, get 15% off your first order when you use the code BIRTHFUL15 at checkout. That's 15% off your first order at jennykane.com, promo code BIRTHFUL15. Let getting dressed be one less thing to worry about. Welcome to Birthful Mighty Parent or Parent-to-Be. I'm Adriana Lozada, and I am just so excited that you're here for this fantastic conversation with Nicole Malia Shapiro, which is part of our Birth Beyond the Clinical Experience series. Okay, so we know that pregnancy and birth involve a great deal of transformation, so much transformation. And as you prepare for facing all this change, it can be so immensely helpful to figure out how to connect with yourself and realize what the heck motivates your choices, right? So the question is, where do you start? Well, Nicole is here today to help us look at this exploration through an embodied lens. And she proposes that by connecting with your body, you can find your own best expert guide for birth. So then let me tell you a little bit about Nicole. Nicole Malia Shapiro is the creator of Holistic Peer Counseling, where she's become a go-to resource for parents, birth pros, sex educators, activists, and countless others searching to bring the human back to humanity. And I love that so much. Along with being a second-generation grassroots organizer and educator, Nicole combines a lifetime of bodywork experience with her Columbia University pre-medical and cultural anthropology studies. This conversation was just so delightful and juicy, and I love how Nicole's approach toward getting comfortable with the intimate nature of birth can also get you into the awesome habit of bringing more oxytocin into your whole life. And who doesn't want that? You're listening to Birthful, here to inform your intuition. Nicole, it is so fantastic to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you, Adriana. I'm excited too.
And I like this idea of your whole scope being trying to bring the human back to humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
That is such a heartwarming, you know, goal.
Right, totally. I just think that's where it all starts.
Yeah. No, and I really appreciate how you look at birth and all the work that you've done to help alter the current culture of birth. And it goes obviously into that big goal of human into humanity. Tell me a bit more of how you got there.
How I got there. That's a great question. Well, it's a long journey. You know, I think the more that I'm in the continental United States, because I grew up in Hawaii, and the way that I put it is I grew up going to an ashram, raised by a single mom that was running a massage school, and I did a lot of theater in Hawaii. And then I left at 18 and I went to New York City to Columbia University. So I had this huge, like, culture shock thing happen, which did a lot to humanize the other for me, actually, like being able to go from, you know, a lower socioeconomic background, marginalized in our own ways, to like being at the hub of everything. You know what I mean? This Ivy League institution, which I didn't even know what Ivy League meant at that time, being in Manhattan and meeting people that I had not been anywhere near growing up. And then them being my roommates and my friends and the grandparents that took me out to eat and all these kinds of things. And it really gave me this, it humanized the other for me.
Mm-hmm. It's so incredible how travel can do that for you. Just being exposed to something different out of your comfort zone.
Oh, and it was hella uncomfortable. I mean, definitely like terrified a lot of the time, not sure if I was allowed to exist. Like, you know, there was definitely a lot of discomfort. But after 15 years of living there and marrying my East Coast Jewish husband and, you know, all the different influences, having the massage clients I had and the mentors that I had, when it came to the giving birth, I was still a bit split, I would say. I would still say I had sort of left a big part of where I came from at that point and was much more academic and much more in the world of New York City. By then, I had been there probably 14 years. And it was in the birth of my first child in a New York City hospital with, you know, someone who I thought was probably the most progressive OB I could have gotten. And coming out of that and almost feeling the two parts of myself had been at odds in the birthing process instead of really working together in the birthing process.
Mm.
And it re-stimulated some of my PTSD from 9/11. I had been downtown in the middle of 9/11 and I had PTSD and it had re-stimulated some of it. And nobody really knew that until I moved to Seattle and I had been interviewing midwives for my second birth. And one of the midwives here asked me if it had re-stimulated my PTSD. And I immediately started crying and I felt like, how did she know that? I never told that to anybody. And as I started to prepare for that second birth, I was getting into my later second trimester, I think, when this all started to really happen. I started feeling that opportunity for these parts of myself to really start to merge together instead of being at odds. I had set up the second birth completely different. I was going to have, I had a home birth in the basement of my house here in Seattle. And I had a midwife with a good amount of experience, but still, you know, I didn't go unassisted. You know, I mean, I was still like, again, kind of skating that world between, you know, myself in these two worlds, and like, how much was I going to be what I was raised in, and how much was I going to be this person that I had grown into in New York? And it just had that humanizing effect. It's like, everybody becomes more human the more I become more human, if that makes any sense. The more I can see myself and the complexities of myself and how I even was at odds with myself, and getting the parts of myself that were at odds with each other to, you know, have a marriage of sorts and come to terms with each other, so that I didn't beat myself up for being in a hospital with my first baby, but understood that who I was at that time, that was the best choice that I had made for myself at that time. And that also helps me to then humanize, you know, anybody else that's in a hospital setting, because those are the best choices they're making at that time, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I find that becoming a mother is one of the most humanizing things you can do. And when people tell you, you won't understand until you're, you know, you won't get it, you quite don't know until you're a parent, and then you become a parent and you go, oh shit, yeah, this.
Oh, right, really?
and then you the first thing you do is you probably appreciate your mom a hell of a lot more, because you realize what they went through that you had no clue in your, you know, individual person not caring for other selfish way, where, you know, viewing them through that lens and going like, oh, you're such a loser and you're such a this and you're such a that. When in fact you get to that other side and go like, oh, okay. Humbling.
Totally. The first thing when I got my first daughter home from the hospital and I got us out of there as soon as I possibly could. It was, you know, it's the first time I'd ever been a patient in a hospital. So I had not really grokked what that would be like, you know, and then here I was, and I was like, get me out of here as fast as you can. And so I'm home and I've got this little tiny being on my chest, and all I can feel and think about is how I moved thousands of miles away from my mother, and how this little being that feels still so much me will probably do that same thing to me one day. And I mean, the tears were just, it's like I felt the pain my mom felt around me moving an ocean and a continent from her.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely. So the topic of this show today is supposed to be birth is an intimate event. And I was talking to you a little bit beforehand that I wasn't quite sure how to approach that, but I really wanted to talk about it.
Okay.
So can you lead us into that?
Yeah, for sure. So I think there's multiple levels to birth being an intimate event. And one I already spoke a bit about, which was the humanizing of myself as I walked into the birth room the second time. Because there's intimacy with myself, and then there's intimacy with others. And I will say that I'm a pretty firm believer that both of them feed on each other. So the more deeply I can connect with myself, the more self-love I can have, the more I can reduce the impacts of self-hatred and shame on who I am in each breath I take, let's say, the more readily capable I am to connect with another human being in all of who they are. So both in the preparation for birth and in the birth itself, and then in parenting after the birth, this awareness and this general philosophy is informing a lot of what I do, both what I did with myself and what I do with the people that work with me at whatever phase they are. I mean, I have some people that work with me, you know, years later after giving birth, or even they're not even parents yet, but they think maybe one day they'll want to be. So since we're focusing on birth, what I'll say is when people come to me prenatally, part of what I have to assess is how connected they are to themselves intimately and how connected they are to each other intimately, because I'm a firm believer in working with people from where they are. So if I have somebody in front of me, you know, if I have people in front of me, for instance, that, you know, the relationship's in fabulous shape, they're super connected and they have a lot of self-awareness and they're, you know, they have practices in self-care, you know, we work from a different level than if I have somebody that comes in and they're fighting and they've never meditated in their lives, or, you know, they have no concept of self-care. So, right, it varies depending on who comes. But what I'm talking to right there even is intimacy, right? That's my awareness of who I'm about to connect with intimately. I don't get to just assert intimacy, right? I have to like be aware and cognizant and gentle with who I'm working with and how they show up. So what I usually do is start with wherever they're at, whoever they are. I have to do a lot of focusing on myself as well to make sure that I'm not triggered by whatever's going on with them, so that I can stay grounded and present to who is actually in front of me. And then I'll just work from where they are to bring them a little bit deeper into themselves and a little bit more connected to each other. Because I grew up in body work and meditation and yogic practices, that tends to be my skill set, right? But I have more and more Christian people showing up to work with me. And so as I learn about the tools that they've been handed within their structure, then we'll work with that, right? So if somebody comes to me and they've done a lot of prayer throughout their lives, well, then let's use that, right? I don't need them to like focus on their kundalini just because right. That's what I do, right?
I like their kundalini.
Yeah, right. Exactly. I don't need to give them a whole like lesson in the culture and practices that I grew up in. We can use what, and again, right, that's intimacy. That's like me knowing them and them knowing me and us like having that dialogue. Another one is cultures that use dance a lot, you know, like if that's a way for them to connect to themselves. The focus is to bring themselves deeper into who they are, which usually is quite cathartic. I have yet to meet somebody who has no self-hatred.
So to go a little deeper into that, like those would be the different tools that you use depending on what's a good sort of technique for them, whether it's prayer, whether it's body work, whether it's dancing. But what is it that the transformation that you're looking for or that you assist with or that happens within them?
They become more connected to themselves and they become more connected to each other. So what we have is, often we have patterns living our lives or stories living our lives that have been incorporated into who we are based on the culture that we're in, the family that we grow up in. And we may or may not agree with those things. We may or may not want to be living our lives that way. I use the body as a major focus point because that's just where I come from. So the idea is to bring us back into ourselves so that we can more intimately connect to ourselves, so that we can make choices in our life that represent who we actually are and what we actually want to do. So we can apply that to birth in the sense of like, here's a good example I'll run into. So generally speaking, I have a higher percentage of home birth people that work with me than your average, like if you looked at the national numbers. Mm-hmm. So generally the people that work with me want to not use medication. Maybe they want to be at home. And people come to that choice for a variety of reasons, right? I have the people that come to that because they are super connected to their bodies and they want birth to be an experience of being very connected to their bodies. And then I have people that come to me that they do it because they've read all the reasons they should be scared of the hospital. Right. And those are two drastically different reasons to decide to have, let's say, a home birth. So I will do a lot of work with that person that says, you know, I'm so terrified of the hospital because the fear right now is what is dictating their choice. And because it's the fear that's dictating their choice, I'm not yet sure if this is actually their choice. Does that make sense?
It does, because the fear can be, you know, if you go deeper into it, they could have a completely different reason that has nothing to do necessarily with the hospital.
Right, exactly, exactly. So when we're not intimately connected to ourselves, we're more readily tousled around by the opinions of others, by whatever we read, wherever we read it, by whatever we watch. So the purpose in a beyond just getting ourselves physically ready to birth, there's also this very practical piece, which is to say, well, let's really get to what you're processing here so that when you make a choice, you're making the best choice for you from you. Not because, you know, I don't know, list all the different people that want to tell you how you should birth your baby, right? So that's a very practical example of why we want to be more intimately connected to ourselves so that we really make sure that the choices that we're making out in the world are a reflection of who we are and who we want to show up as in the world. And then that also translates into how we want to birth our baby.
And you made a great point is that, especially during childbirth and parenting and pregnancy, it can be a really overwhelming moment in life because there's so many new things thrown at you, like all these books choices and all the things. So that can get overwhelming to a point of, you know, decision fatigue, of just losing sight of just saying, I don't know what I want, and feeling lost within yourself.
For sure. For sure. And what I know from trauma is that is trauma, right? Like if I am not in myself, because the other thing I was going to say about this is the other side of that is then when whatever happens is what happens, I have personal responsibility on the flip side too, right? Like I chose to, for instance, I chose to birth that baby in a hospital and I didn't really get real with myself about all the details of what was going to happen to me when I got in that hospital. I had some ideas, but I really didn't get really clear about, there were things I stayed in denial about, let's put it that way. And so when I come out the flip side and I'm a little broken, like part of what puts me back together is me recognizing that I did choose to put myself in that setting. And actually, I think that the more aware of my choices I am and the more conscious I can be of making those choices, the less impact the trauma has on me on the flip side, even if things happen outside of my control. Does that make sense?
Because it was something that happened, but not that it happened to you.
Right.
It happened because of circumstances and you know, you can own a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel more in myself, right? Yeah. So in the so information fatigue is a great word. I mean, it's like it's information battery almost sometimes it feels like, right?
Yeah.
And especially when you're talking about something as deep and primal and intimate as birth, you know, I mean, it's like the places that I had to go in myself to prepare for my second baby. I don't think any other thing could have taken me there.
Mm.
If that makes sense. It's like, here I was, super pregnant. I think I'm remembering this meeting I had with some friends on a couch, at my couch, and I'm like really facing down this second baby and remembering how I didn't like a lot of what I felt like after my first one. And so I was anticipating this second one and I was imagining that I had prepared differently. I mean, I had done a lot differently for myself prepared in very different ways. And set up things in very different ways, but I still didn't really know what was going to happen. And to sit with that fear and really process the things that came up and to cry the tears and to speak all the thoughts, you know, and then I turned around and I was in labor for almost 3 days with my second baby.
Mm, not quick. Not the quick second baby.
Not quick. Nope. And you know, the truth is that's me. I like to be very aware of every step. I like things to be really, you know, I almost picture an elephant. It's like, I like to be really like present and aware and really taking the information from each morsel of something that happens to my body. But the reason I brought it up was because after 2 days of me being in labor, I mean, I really had worn my team out and nothing swayed me. I was like, what? I'm having a baby. Like, you know, I knew I could watch them like wearing out and it just didn't sway me. I wasn't worried. Uh-huh. And my midwife told me later that the midwife conversations outside of the room were like, you know, they were starting to get worried because we were going on day three, but they just, you know, I so wasn't.
Yum, delicious, tasty, super clean water. That is what we now happily drink, thanks to our AquaTrue Reverse Osmosis Water Purifier. It's just so much easier for us to stay hydrated. For me, that is vital because I am prone to getting headaches, and so being well hydrated really helps with that. And if you're pregnant or nursing, being well hydrated is also vital for you because good hydration is key during this time of life. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process that removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options. Also, their filters are affordable and long-lasting with just one set of filters from their classic purifier, making the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. Using AquaTrue water can even improve the taste of your coffee, tea, and anywhere else you use water to cook, like for making rice, quinoa, stocks, or soups. I truly can't say enough good things about my AquaTrue. AquaTrue also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, my listeners receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to aquatrue.com, that's AquaTrue.com, and enter code BIRTHFUL at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to aquatrue.com and use the promo code BIRTHFUL. With Mother's Day coming up fast, are you looking to get your mom, grandma, or mother figure a gift that they'll actually love? You know, something that is treasured instead of dying out or collecting dust? If so, you need to know about MyLifeInABook.com, which is a service that helps turn their life stories into a beautiful book that can be passed down. How amazing is that? And the process couldn't be easier. Basically, if they can use email, they can create their book. Every week, My Life in a Book will send them an email with a prompt question to get them started. And if they don't like the question, they can easily edit it or change it. We gave a My Life in a Book to a family member that always wants to document all family get-togethers through images. And let me tell you, the process of sending the gift was super simple, even letting us choose the date we wanted the gift to be sent. I'm so looking forward to discovering stories about her youth, her adventures, and the challenges she has overcome. And since My Life in a Book lets you add an image with each answer, she can now share the story that goes along with her many photos. Another great thing is that the answers can be edited at any time before the book is printed, in case she wants to add anything else. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use the code BIRTHFUL at checkout for 10% off. create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 10% off today. As a doula, I had an experience one day. It wasn't a 3-day birth, but it was a 2-day birth at a hospital, mind you, with a mama that she was, and she's love. I love her so much because of that. I mean, she was so, like you're saying, you were good with it. She was so good with it. This thing was taking a long time and she was just chugging along and standing and taking little naps. And I'm like, how are you doing? And she would just smile and go like, I'm good. Everything's good. You know, hour 36. And she's like, I'm good. Everything's good.
Exactly.
All right. Well, we'll keep doing this. Meanwhile, Dad and I are like, taking naps wherever we can.
I mean, it is hard, right? I mean, we've got all these hormones coursing through us to help us do it. And that was part of what I knew, you know. We actually have this really magical story because my mom had been, I went into labor almost 2 weeks early. And my mom was scheduled to fly in. And so, you know, she made this joke when I went into labor, you better not have this baby before I get there. But I knew that was 3 days later. And I was like, God, I hope not, you know, at the beginning of the labor. But sure enough, she walks in and she, you know, she's been a doula trainer probably 15 to 20 years now. And she's been at a lot of births. And so in walks my, you know, my mother doula, basically. And she's fresh. We sent the other doula home because she'd been there overnight. The midwives, you know, were sort of back and forth. They kept coming and checking me and then leaving and checking me and then leaving. And then my mom shows up, you know, and she looks at me and she's like, how you doing? And again, let's talk about some intimacy, right? This is my mother.
Right.
And I said, they want me to like go to sleep and they want me to take this stuff to slow my uterus down. And what? My mom goes, she just stares me straight in the eye, you know, and she says, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to have a baby, you know? So she says, well, all right, let's have a baby. And there were hours and hours of it just being me and my mom.
Mm-hmm.
Her hands on me. That was the other thing. I mean, touch is a big thing for me. And I think I saw that in that birth. Like my other doula was pretty hands off, used a TENS unit. And that was just not the same thing as having my mom's hands pushing on my sacrum and, you know, all the communication that happens around touch for me.
Yeah. And you knew she was coming.
And I knew she was coming.
So that's such a, thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. But to get to that place, not individually, it's both individually and culturally and at all levels, it's difficult culturally. Oh, yeah. Like it is difficult to get to that, you know, place where you were able to get to.
Yeah, I'm forever learning how difficult it is, and I will say, you know, sometimes I just cry about it because, oh, it's such a valuable place.
So I think a lot of what's important, and I think this keeps coming up in all these shows that I do, is the whole rethinking of birth. And it can be scary because, you know, we've been doing this, UI, birth workers in general, we've been doing this for a while. And we all started in a place. You were in a hospital in New York City. I didn't have a doula. Like we all started in a place where birth was what we culturally knew. And maybe for me more than you because you had that different background growing up. But I think a big part of the general population culturally tends to think of birth as a scary physical event that is fortunately, quote unquote, fortunately supervised and taken care of by professionals, again, quote unquote, in the event something goes wrong. And thank goodness they're there when something goes wrong.
Right, right. Yeah, I see it so differently.
Right.
Yeah.
There was the birth stories that I'm sharing, I have permission to share. I just wanted to put that out there. But I had a second time client who ended up, this was a fun story. Her first birth was very different than her second birth. Her first birth, she made the choices she wanted to, but she was like, I loved my epidural. It was great. It was fantastic, right? And then second time around, she's like, oh, but we had separation because of infection and all this. And I don't want to. I don't want to do the epidural this time because of my temperature, but I really loved my epidural.
Right.
How can we do this? And she was doing hypnobirthing and they live out of the country. And she's gonna go, oh, you're telling my story, but I have permission. she's given me permission. Hi, Tammy.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi, Tammy. Thank you for letting us share your story. So she doesn't live here in Rochester anymore. She lives out of the country and they came back to give birth. So they were staying at a hotel like a month beforehand. And she called me and she was doing a hypnobirthing very calm. Her water broke at midnight and she's like, you know, I'm good. No, nothing's much. And I'm like, well, just, you know, stay in bed, you know, let the midwives know, but just stay in bed and whatever. And then she called me at 7 a.m. saying things are more intense, but we're good. We're so happy here. Later, I found out that they were all like dad and their son, all in bed, just having like a really, she calls it my kumbaya moment, like really calm and breathing. She would check out for a contraction and come back into it. This was at 7 a.m. She called me. Says, do you want me to say, no, whenever.
Right.
At 8 a.m., I get a text message from her husband saying, well, things more intense. And it's him texting, right? And I go, well, does she want to go to the hospital? Does she want me over? And he says, you, yes. Hospital, no.
No.
Okay. And I'm like, okay, great. I am on my way. I get there like at 8:26. He called me at 8. I get there at 8:26. Baby was born at 8:15.
Yeah, right. Right. That's right.
And she got up and she felt like, oh, I feel like I need to go to the bathroom. It wasn't the bathroom. You know, she gave birth in the bathroom, though. That was nice for cleanup. and everybody that she tells her story to says, oh, my God, thank goodness you were okay.
Oh, interesting. Really?
Right. They're like, oh, gosh, how scary for you. Thank goodness you're okay.
Wow. Such different population of people than I talk to.
Right. Well, and she would have never set up a home birth for herself. Mm-hmm, you know, she loved her epidural. But when we were debriefing the birth afterwards, she was saying, I keep getting this message from everybody saying, thank goodness you're okay and that, oh, everything was fine. And oh my goodness, how scary. And in her mind, she was like, you understand that actually was really beautiful. And it was a great thing because the level of relaxation that she had earlier at 7 a.m. in that bed, she was telling me, I don't know if I could have been that relaxed.
No.
At the hospital with the machines and the things. She had already done that birth, right?
That was why I kept trying to get out of the hospital. I was like, stop interrupting me.
Right. But she was not, you know, she wasn't there. It's all about what you were toggling, like where we're at. Once it happened to her, she was so happy about her birth.
Beautiful story. Yeah. Well, I mean, you start to talk about that and I start thinking about like, you know, the history that, or the herstory that gets us here, gets us to where birth moved to the hospital and it was taken from the home and women and given basically over to men, because at that time that was who the doctors were. And then now we find ourselves in this, you know, that's a microcosm of the macrocosm of the culture of birth right now. And how those of us that know this experience that you just described that she had, that know that that is birth, how do we now get that to happen more and get it to be organized around that happening, right? That's what I hadn't anticipated in the hospital, was how much they would feel comfortable interrupting me, how entitled they would feel to taking over the space while I was giving birth. I hadn't anticipated that really. And I certainly couldn't anticipate how distracting it would be and how hard it would be to birth in that type of a situation.
This is the double-edged sword, the difficulty of shining a light to the possibility of that experience of birth as an intimate and transformative event for yourself that happens the best when you don't have interventions.
Right, exactly.
Knowing that that is so at odds with the experience that 99% of people will have.
Mm-hmm.
And then how to not have the listeners who are pregnant and excited about their pregnancy and looking forward to their birth be scared about that's possibly coming, and how to make it better. Because it's not like everybody go run and have a home birth, because that's not a good option for everybody either. You know, it's, you got to choose it yourself. Like you were saying, what are the choices you are making intimately?
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. That's exactly it. You know, I was just talking to somebody last night, actually, about embodiment. They had talked about the words embodiment and discernment. So embodiment is the term, right? My birth curriculum, for instance, is embodied birth. Okay, I want to say two things. So first I'll finish this, and then I want to say something about the intimate space. Is they were talking about this sense of intuitional, like, knowing. And I said I often give that less. I focus less on a knowing as I more focus on a choice and a willingness. Because, you know, you can have a hunch, but you don't always know. I think there's been this desire to have the intuition know, and I more like to think of the intuition as something that helps me make my choice. Because then if it isn't what I thought it was, I'm less likely to be thrown, right? If the emphasis is on me knowing, then, and it doesn't happen the way I quote unquote knew it was going to happen, I'm more likely to be confused and thrown off my center than if I recognize that I have made a choice. Right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and especially when we're not in generally in tune with our intuition. So mm-hmm. That's a muscle that hasn't been worked. We don't trust it that much. So it's hard to suddenly, all of a sudden, at this point in time, you're going to wish for trusting that intuition, and then you feel let down when it doesn't work, right?
Right. As opposed to being like, my work is to try and continue to connect with my intuition and then make the best choices I can from that space that I can. So the other thing that I wanted to say that informed the embodied birth curriculum a lot, and actually, right, the first course I ever created was More Oxytocin, Please, Increasing Intimacy in the Birthing Room. So I used a lot of the science of oxytocin to pull everything together. So, you know, I mean, I'm not saying I haven't ever supported births in hospitals. I most definitely have. And many of them have been lovely and beautiful and wonderful. And what we focus on is how to bring as much intimacy and oxytocin generation into that setting as possible. So, you know, there's a lot of things to think about. Like, this actually wasn't a hospital birth, it was a birthing center birth. But I had a couple that I was working with that really were like making out during labor really worked very well for them.
Mm-hmm.
But they were very uncomfortable with anybody being around while they were making out. And so they would make out. And then, you know, I would leave the room, they'd make out, and then her contractions would pick up and they'd want me to come in because she wanted me to massage her hips. It was this like back and forth thing where it was like they wanted to make out because that helped the oxytocin get going. But then it was uncomfortable for them to do that with another person in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were like jockeying back and forth in that setting, right? So there's things like that to consider. Like, what are the things that get – you spoke of Tammy's hallelujah moment, right? Like, what are the things in our family dynamic, in our partnership that help us get to those hallelujah moments?
Yeah, she called it kumbaya, but yeah, same thing.
Kumbaya, sorry. Kumbaya. Kumbaya moments. So – as we can, you know, this is some of the information gathering that I'll do with prenatal clients is help them try and find those moments. A lot of times they don't even notice they happen because they're a bit altered, state-y, you know, like people will kind of flow into that kumbaya moment and not even notice that it happened. So getting them to the awareness level where they can actually start to go, oh, that was that, what I could also call an oxytocin moment. That was that moment where I felt super close to that person. Time stood still. I was very in the moment, very aware of what was happening. There wasn't a lot of fear, probably no fear. And so trying to find naturally what those moments are within the dynamic of their current lives and using those as preparation for the birth and learning how you're going to integrate them into the birth itself. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Some of what I encourage my doula clients to do is give themselves pleasure moments, but meaning not just go and have sex, but or make out or whatever.
Yeah, no, there's like, it could be tea. It could be a smell.
I have them like eat your favorite food alone at home, not watched, not out in a restaurant, but just, you know, really savor that thing. Or have a dance party, or have, yeah, it's finding what works for them that gives them that, what you're talking about, that feeling of so delicious and yummy moment.
Right.
So that they can practice it, yeah.
To me, that's increasing intimacy, right? Like that practice, just to be home. I mean, you said that and I immediately could feel myself biting into a chocolate truffle. And to really like, that increases my awareness of myself, my sensations, my body, how it's responding. So that to me is a level of intimacy. What is interesting to start to run into, and this is how I am forever learning from whomever works with me and whomever talks with me, is the discomfort, triggers, shame, the list of things that keep people from that.
Yeah.
Keep people from that pleasure. You know, like even for myself, I don't know if 10 years ago I could have done that practice that you were saying specifically with food and probably not with a chocolate truffle because of all the kind of body image stuff that I had imposed upon me being in theater and my father's a real workout nut. Right. So it's like, there's the isolated desired intent of the practice. And then there's the very real complications in the way of the practice. And I think that this is the way that for me, you know, this is what yogic traditions have been all about for me, is getting ourselves in these. And my path was an ascetic path. So it's almost like, let's put ourselves in discomfort so we can find all the triggers, so that we can clear them, so that we can find bliss in even the most austere experiences. Yeah. So there's like the practice itself. So if the practice is to sit with alone with your own favorite food and eat it, the person could also be triggered by being alone. They could be triggered by food. They could, right? There's all these other things. So creating the space for those things to get cleared so that you really can have that incredible experience of sitting alone with your favorite food and fully bringing in the sensory experience of that.
What are some of the, I'm not going to say tips, skills. I'm not going to say tips. What are some suggestions for ways to help clear those discomforts so that you can get to a point where then you actually release the oxytocin?
Well, I often say throw a lot of fits. So the holistic peer counseling work and the embodiment work is a lot of this. And it takes practice, right? It's like, especially because we sort of live in an emotion, body, shamed world, right? Like bringing the human back to humanity, a lot of what that is for me is to recognize that human beings need attention, where attention is often seen as a bad word. Human beings we are incredibly expressive, erotic human beings, like that's part of being human. And so much of that has been vilified and commodified, and reclaiming that is important. And so that we can be us, right? So we really can show up as us in the world. So if what happens is, for instance, Adriana has this amazing practice to go and, you know, to suggest to your clients that you get this food and you go and you sit, is what, you know, what comes up even when you just suggest it. So you suggest it, and then how is that for you? What comes up for you when I say that? And so then that already gives rise to the opportunity for clearing to begin. If they say, oh my God, but you know, I don't have the money for that. Or, well, my favorite food is really something I shouldn't eat. Or, oh my God, I can't wait to do it. Let's leave right now and let me just do it. All those stories are part of the clearing. Another part of the clearing could be, I feel like crying. Another part of the clearing could be the memories that come up of the food. I remember when I used to eat this with my grandmother, and my grandmother's passed away, and wow, she was such an amazing human being, and you know, all of that. So much, I think, really is about releasing the shame around the complexities and variety of experiences that we have as, you know, human beings living moment to moment. Does that make sense?
It does. Absolutely. Yeah. Because another thing that I suggest to my clients to do is to journal, or to actually sit with, think about the fears they have about this birth and go deeper. Is it fear of intervention, or is it fear of, you know, what is it deeper that you get?
Right. Exactly.
And I don't always tell them to go eat cake. I tell them they can dance.
Right. Sure. There's so many practices.
But I like that next level of, what did that bring up for you? Because it is in that awareness of you acknowledging the feeling that things get cleared.
Right, exactly.
I find myself every time more and more realizing that to prepare for birth, you actually have to do a lot of introspective work beforehand, which seems even harder than just going and taking a childbirth class.
Oh, yeah.
Which is all external, like the childbirth class, reading the magazines, getting the OB, like all that is immense, great preparation on the outside. And then you get into birth and it hits you.
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, you, as soon as you said that, you know, again, I was back to my first birth where it was like, I had taken the childbirth education classes at the best place with the best person, right? Like, And just really being on the flip side of that. And, you know, part of what really inspired me to follow in my mom's footsteps and start teaching at all was the awareness of how much was missing from the ways that I had prepped. I had gotten massage every other week. I had gotten acupuncture every other week. I had had one of the best doulas in town. I got myself the best OB in town. I went to the best place for childbirth ed. And yet, I was not prepared. You know what I mean? And so as I did this deeper work to prepare for my second, part of what inspired me to start actually, you know, going beyond just my own personal experience and wanting more people to have access to the tools that I was using was because of that. Because it was like, has this been erased off of the planet? Like, did we used to know this and we don't anymore? Where would I have even known to find it? You know, it was like there was all this work that I had done that I know can help people. I know it. And had someone else known it, but just I had never run into them? You know, I really, because part of my work was really the intersectionality, is recognizing birth as a sexual event, which really, when I walked out of that, I was like, I think orgasmic birth had just come out. Right. So then I was like, ooh, okay, someone does know something about this. I'm not the only one that's aware of this, you know, because I hadn't run into it, even with a mother who was a doula educator. Even with, I was talking to somebody about reading Spiritual Midwifery my first time. And I didn't really pull it out of there. It's in there. But when I read the book, it didn't really pop out at me as a thing, right?
Yeah, it's kind of between the lines in there.
Yeah, exactly. It's between the lines. And the truth was, is that there's so much noise around sex. There's so much distraction in the world around sex.
Well, and shame too, right?
Oh my God, so much shame. I think that's what gives rise to all the distraction, you know? So yeah, so I'm hoping that with all of us, you know, yourself included, and all the, God, all the amazing people that I have met over the years of focusing on birth, I hope we're helping people get what they need so that they can have more moments, like more kumbaya moments, because they're really amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really amazing.
And then you feel so happy for them because you know that it doesn't make it any less tough. It doesn't make it any less, you know, all the things that birth is. It's still that.
No. Oh, but yeah.
You're in a better place to be able to ride that wave.
There's like this certainty about who I am today that I feel like I claimed in my second daughter's birth.
Mm.
There's this like, yeah, that's me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's a lot to take off. It really is. It's, it takes dedication. It's a lot of work. It's not, this is right. This is my thing about the tips, is it's like, it's not just going to happen because you read a blog. It's not going to happen. I mean, I finally wrote a book. I wrote a book on the holistic peer counseling work, and it took a long time for me to actually get that book out because I didn't want people to read the book and think they get it. Like, the book is an entryway into it, but the work, the actual work of doing this is deep and demanding and, rewarding, so rewarding. It's a lot like birth in that way. It's so much work and it's so rewarding, but it, you know, you have to have that, you have to really make that commitment to do it. You really do. So not everybody's ready to do that, right?
No. And, but absolutely. Because so I've started to tell my clients that the work they're doing during pregnancy, like this hard introspective work and of really exploring where they're at, is early pre-labor. Like, they're already in labor.
Yeah.
And yeah, whatever they're doing now is going to make it shorter at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least more enjoyable, or, you know.
Yeah, that's a great framing. And it's also the beginning of parenting, right? I mean.
Oh, yeah.
You said that, right? That's the other thing, is it's like, this is also getting ready to be a parent. Because as much as we're talking about the information fatigue for birth, goodness gracious, as soon as you become a parent, right? There's everybody telling you how you should do it.
Well, at the same time, you're getting tons of 24/7 stimuli from this little baby who's messing up with your sleep, and you're a new person, and much. Yeah.
So much. Yeah.
Start doing the work right now, people.
Yeah. Right. Totally. Agreed.
Thank you so much for this fun talk. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thanks for having me. It really was a joy.
That was Nicole Malia Shapiro, the creator behind HolisticPeerCounseling.com. There, she offers self-led online courses as well as a series of neutrality exercise workbooks, each created specifically for the birthing parent, the birth partner, and the birth doula. You can find Nicole on Instagram at Nicole Shapiro, and Nicole is spelled N-E-K-O-L-E. And you can also connect with us at Birthful Podcast on Instagram. In fact, if you're not driving, we love it when you take a screenshot of this episode right now and post it to your stories, sharing your biggest takeaway from the episode. Make sure to tag at Birthful Podcast so we can see it and amplify it. You can find the in-depth show notes and transcript of this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about my birth and postpartum preparation classes and download your free postpartum preparation plan. Also, if you find this podcast to be an invaluable resource for you, the best way to support us is by taking any one of my perinatal classes, doing one of my doula workshops, or trying out some of the wonderful products made by our sponsors. This is what allows us to continue doing this work. Birthful is created and produced by me, Adriana Lozada, with production assistance from Asia Plati. Thank you so very much for listening to Birthful, for sharing it with your friends, for leaving amazing reviews, and be sure to follow us on Good Pods, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and just everywhere you listen. And then come back for more ways to inform your intuition.